taking my text out of Acts chapter 17, verses 16 through 34. Very popular passage of Scripture, I think. Probably not much should come to a surprise this morning, but I have a few things I want to share. If I was to title this morning's message, I guess the official title would be Agnosto Theo. Yeah. Does anybody know Agnosto Theo?
Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't mean the person. It is the unknown God. And actually, I think most all of you know Acts chapter 17, but if you were able to put it together, you would have probably known Agnosto Theo, the unknown God, there. But nonetheless, we put it there. However, if I was to get us into a mindset and into a direction of thought, I would title it, There's Something in My Pocket. And now that could go a couple different ways. Remember the old Girl Scout song? There's something in my pocket, it belongs across my face. And I can't remember, but it ends up being a great big smile. You never heard that? Oh, I was a Girl Scout long ago. So you all laugh. I had two sisters. I sat in a lot of brownies meetings. And so, and at that age, I really went into girls. So that was, I wasn't into boys either. I really wasn't. girls are icky when you're that little. And so, but anyways, had I known the opportunity that was laid before me, I might have had a different mindset. If I was the player like Isaiah. That boy, we tease him so much about all the girls that really all it was is just a natural, I don't know the difference between girls and boys. I'm friends to everybody as a little kid he was. And so, and then we teased him so much, now he knows the difference. He's not as open to being friendly to girls anymore. But nonetheless, so I went to a lot of Girl Scout meetings, but something in my pocket, you go the other way around and anybody that's been into the Lord of the Rings understand the riddle. He's got something in his pocket. What's in his pocket? And so, but nonetheless, something in my, and really, where that thought, something in my pocket, come from, I am grateful. And I know we still got a lot of winter ahead of us. And it's not like I'm going out and running around without a coat on outside. But I am so grateful for spring breaking upon us. You know there's a night next week where it's not supposed to drop below freezing? Y'all, just wait. It won't be long until we'll be a little bit uncomfortable, so we'll hang our coats up in the closet for the last time of the year. It's coming. It's almost there. And then we'll just start complaining about being hot outside. But invariably, it says, no, never again. Invariably, one of us will hang our coat up in the closet. And it won't be till next year that we put it back on again. Next fall, we put it back on again and reach our hands in our sleeves and find out that we left in there that valuable, wonderful thing called money. You remember when you used to do that? Anybody do that this spring? This fall, you found money in your pocket? Brother Daniel did. So we're going to all volunteer to do his dry cleaning. Or at least take it in. But you remember, I always find a pair of gloves in my pocket, my coat pocket. So I'm like, yeah, I found some gloves. Now I don't have to buy some this year. And there's always something in our coat pockets. And it's almost like, and I'm sure you don't, but it's almost like you put it in there so it's ready for next spring or next fall, right? And so sometimes you just kind of put things. I don't know how many of you are as bad as me. One pocket's got my keys. The other pocket's got my pocket knife. It's got my handkerchief. It's got my Tic Tacs. It's got my face mask. It's got my extra magazine. It's got my thumb drives and all that fits in one pocket. And that's normal. That's not abnormal. That's all I carry with me on a day-to-day basis. That's why if you ever wonder why my pants are so baggy or why they're pulling down so much, I've got quite a bit I carry. And it's held there because, and funny enough, I'll use all that stuff, hopefully not the magazine, with extra magazine for my, but I use almost all that stuff on a daily basis, and I need it on my person. You women got purses? I don't want a purse because I don't want to have to keep up with something else, but you're kind of lucky. Could you imagine if I carried a purse, how much stuff I'd be carrying with me? It'd be so much. And so there's something. What do you got all that stuff in your pocket? What do you got all that stuff in your purse for? What do you got all that stuff at your disposal? Because someday you want to reach in there and have at your convenience what you have. Amen? I don't know what you see when you look around the world today. I don't know what you think when you think that the end might be at hand. I don't know what's in the back of your mind when you think to yourself, the mark of the beast may be coming. We can't buy or sell. Maybe you think that you're going to be taken before the mark is here. Maybe you're going to be taken after. I don't know what's in your mind when you think about the trouble and trials that might be coming. But let me tell you what should be first and foremost in your mind is, thank God you found me worthy to be alive at such a time as this. I kind of somehow would love to believe and love to think and love to have it in my mind that God has us put in his pocket, has us shoved down into his purse for such a time as this, and he's ready to pull us out and use us at a moment's notice. And when I did the word picture of pull us out and use this, remember Mary Poppins pulling all that stuff out of her handbag, you know? I had a picture of God grabbing us by the hair. I know. But I could picture it how I want to picture it. Maybe it's the ear lobe, I don't know. But picking us up by the hair and just pulled us out of the bag to use us. But we might think to ourselves, oh man, I don't want to go through all this. Church, there was a time in church history where people would have looked and says, yes, I get to serve God through difficult times. And in my mind and heart of hearts, I believe that God has reserved us and preserved us for such a time as this. And so that's one direction my mind is going to when I say something's in his pocket, something's in my pocket. What's in, you know, we're in God's pocket. But another thing that comes through my mind is this. When we minister to somebody, we speak to somebody, when we share with somebody, they have a hole in front of them. What is in their past that God has ordained in their past so that they'll be ready to receive what God has for them today? Let me explain that by reading Acts chapter 17, starting at verse 16. Something that was done in the past that is sitting there festering, waiting for God to speak to it today. Verse 16, now while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was stirred in him when he saw the city wholly given to idolatry. The first thing I notice and the first thing I see is Paul looking around and looking at things in the middle of the situation. Now, it's kind of easy for Paul. He's in this environment where they have idols and they have altars and they have all these things all around. He's able to see what's going on there. It's kind of easy. It's hard for us to see into the hearts of people we're ministering to, isn't it? It's kind of hard to see what they're giving over to. You need to be prayed up and you need to be readied up so God can speak to you. This is what's going on in the hearts and lives of the person you're speaking. But Paul's there, and the first thing we see is that Paul is, he's not only there, he's there. He's learning of the people that he's dealing with. Church, we need to, as we minister to some, we need to realize who they are and where they are and what's in their life. In verse 17, therefore disputed he in the synagogue with the Jews and with the devout persons and the market daily with them that met with him. Then certain philosophers, Epicureans, and of the Stoics, and encountered him, and some said, what will this babbler say? He seemeth to be a setter forth of strange gods, which is really a funny thing for an entire area, nation, city, Athens, to say when they have idols and altars galore. I listened to an NPR show one time. A Buddhist was on there talking about how he prays to various different gods. And I can't remember, 100 and I want to say 115, 118 different gods he prayed to. I'm sorry, 118 different deities he prayed to. My number might be a little bit off, but it was extreme like that. You get the point. And he says, he's talking to the show host, and he says, and it doesn't matter how many gods I pray to. He says, there will always be somebody after one of my talks that will come to me and present a different one that I've never known. He says, and I'll just have to add that to the list. And so the host kind of joked with him. He says, so you don't want our listeners to write in and give you new gods that you might not know? He says, well, they can write in all they want to, but no, don't give it to me, because my time is taken up enough every day praying to the 118. I can't handle anymore. Doesn't that seem ridiculous? But you can understand the pantheism of this, where they have multi gods and others. He seems to be a setter forth of strange gods, because he preacheth unto them Jesus and the resurrection. And they took him and brought him unto Areopagus, saying, may we know what this new doctrine whereof he speaketh is. For thou bringest certain strange gods to our ear, we who would therefore what these things mean. And for all the Athenians and strangers which were there spent their time in nothing else but to either to tell or to hear some new thing. They always want to hear something new. I know people in churches, show me something new, show me something. How about I teach you something old? And we just enjoy what's here. I want a new thing. I'm going to go here to this preacher because they're teaching me new things. Be careful. For thou bringest certain... verse 22. Then Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hills and said, ye men of Athens, I perceive that in all things ye are too superstitious. For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found... Again... Paul is there. Paul is wanting to know about the people he's dealing with. He says, I pass by. I'm looking around. I'm noticing things. I'm seeing things. There's altars. This hill is full of altars. And he says, I found an altar with this inscription. You know, when I'm looking at this, when I'm seeing this, I'm thinking, how many of you go through museums and actually read the plaques that are in front of the things in the museum? Some of you do, I could tell. Some of you do. I kind of read part of it to see if it's actually interesting to me. The ones I like are the very short ones. I like going to the car museum in Rockton. Has anybody ever been to that car museum in Rockton? It is cool. Roscoe, I guess. It is really cool. It's got like the Ghostbusters car in there. It's got the Batman mobile. It's got Sanford and Son's truck in there. It's got a lot. It's got a whole Kennedy exhibit with the car that Kennedy was shot in. It had for a while Johnny Cash's car that he built one piece at a time. It's got a car in there with pennies all over it. And it's got the Bonnie and Clyde's car in there. It's got all these cars in there. You can walk through and it's got Stalin's car with 4-inch thick glass, because it was bulletproof glass. It's got all these cool cars in there. I'll actually read those placards in front of it. It's one of the few that I do read because that interests me. Can you tell? But for the most part, I don't like reading a lot of the placards. Some of it's just, oh my goodness, so boring. I've been in some museums that just, oh. Sarah, I like museums. I just, certain ones. Paul's actually walking through and reading the names on these altars. Do you actually look that deep into a person you're ministering with to get to know them? Find out their history? Brother Cliff tells an incredible story about him being up on a roof one time and reaching out and catching a guy that was falling. And then he used that moment of time to minister to that guy. He said, if you would have fallen, where would you spend eternity? That's what Paul did. He used that moment in time to minister. Verse 23 again, for I passed by and beheld your devotions, and I found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God, whom therefore ye ignorantly worship, him I declare unto you. I'm going to, for the sake of time, I'm going to stop right there, because that kind of speaks to where I'm going this morning. It goes on, and guess what? I know this is going to surprise you, but Paul ministers an incredible time with these people. He shares with them this incredible thing, and then at the end of it, some people didn't believe him. I know that's a shock to you, but some people didn't believe him. And some people said, we'll listen again. But there were some that believed him. Is it worth you putting it out there? Is it worth the rejection? Is it worth the feeling that what you're doing is for nothing if there's only a few going to hear? I could have shut the doors of the church a long time ago and had a bit of an easier life. Which one of you that's been helped would have wanted me to shut the doors before you showed up? Zig Ziglar asked his mom, I guess he was the last of many, I can't remember how many, but a lot of kids. And he asked his mom, "Mom, why did you have so many children?" He was the last child. And she looked at him and says, "Well, which one would you wanted me to stop before?" Makes sense, right? Who's the next person that's going to come through those doors that need to be helped? How long do we have to wait, church? How long do we have to invest? How long do we have to keep giving? How long do we have to keep being here? How long do we have to keep doing what we're doing? How long do we deal with discouragement? How long until that next person comes in that we can help? Is it worth it? Plow in the field, listen to this man standing up here, preaching and teaching and just sharing the same thing. You all have heard this stuff before. Is it worth it? Investing, holding fast. Who's the next one that might come in to be helped? It may be one of your family members. It may be a total stranger. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? We ask ourselves that in the natural very often. We keep asking, is it worth it? Is it worth it? Why are we still here? This church should have been consumed in the economic problems of life. This church should have been consumed. This church should have been just kind of faded out when there was only 3, 4, 5, or 6 of us here for years and years and years. It should have been done away with. But thank God. Thank God that we persevered. Thank God. It's like God's kept us in the hollow of his hand for such a time as this. Who's next? It may be one more between now and the time that I lay my head lay my head in that casket and go on to be with the Lord. It may only be one more. It may be no more in my lifetime, but it may preserve. God may preserve this place for the next lifetime, the next generation to come. See, God's got things held in his hand. He's got them stored away in his pocket sometimes. And we keep living and we keep giving and we keep investing and we keep putting in. And sometimes that's a thing so that you're able to minister to somebody else. Isaac was the man's man. I love Isaac. I can relate to Isaac. See, the promise was given to Abraham, right? That's fun. That's exciting, ain't it? Start a new thing. Let's go. We can do this. That's fun. We can do that. And then with Jacob, he had the 12 sons. And he could see how it was that God was moving through the 12 sons. And that promise, he could see how the promise is fine. But Isaac, he had a bunch of fighting twins. Or a couple fighting twins. The promise was passed on to him. He got his dad's leftovers. Woohoo! You know. Gideon, how's it feel to get your dad's leftovers? Woohoo, yippee. It ain't much. I get to maintain. And Isaac just maintained. But he maintained. And he never got to see the promise fulfilled. But if it weren't for Isaac, the promise would have never been fulfilled. Jesus would have never been born. Thank God for Isaac. Amen? You may be living Isaac. You may just be that bridge between two. You know what sucks about a bridge is you keep getting stepped on. You never get to see the destination. You just keep getting stepped on. But you need it, don't you? Lord, use me. Something in our pocket. Something in his pocket. We see Paul on Mars Hills. But the best I can see in the book that I read, the anthropologist book that I read, it didn't really say, but close to 600 years before Jesus was born was a man. By the name of, I'm going to say, Epimenides. He was a religious philosopher. If there's one class in school that frustrated me more than any else, one that I hated, was statistics. I cheated my way all the way through statistics. I did. I bought homework assignments through statistics. And that's how I aced statistics. It cost me about $150 more so I can pass statistics than the class cost. Now, I'll tell you, after I had the assignment, I worked my way backwards to see how they got the answers. But if I was going to pay for it, that was the answer that was going to get submitted to the grade. So I cheated, kinda. I used it as a learning and then cheated. Epimenides, some 600 years before. And God knows these things from the beginning to the end. He comes on the scene and he makes a claim. Let me step back for a minute. I'm not looking at my notes right. 600 years before Jesus, Athens had a plague that was plaguing the city of Athens. Does anybody here know about a plague? Does anybody here know about an epidemic? Does anybody here know about problems going on where there was a plague come on the scene, and Athens goes to all these altars they have on Mars Hills and they sacrifice to this god and to that god and to that god and to that god, apologizing and repenting, and nothing, the plague is still there. Finally, they call upon the experts, and this man by Nicias goes all the way, and I can't remember, to Crete, I think it was, to find Epimenides, this religious philosophy. That whole study of philosophy should be chucked out the window. It's confusion and stupidity. It is. Anybody else ever take, Brother Daniel's taken philosophy. Anybody else ever take philosophy classes? Oh my goodness, they suck. They get deep in your head and be confused. I'm trying to get away from philosophy classes, but it's just drive me nuts. All right, so Epimenides, this religious philosopher, steps on the scene. And everybody says, what should we do? We can't appease any gods to take this plague away from us. What shall we do? This is where the agnostotheo, the unknown god, comes in. 600 years before Paul, over 600 years before Paul stands on Mars Hill, Epimenides looks at the people and he says this. I get this out of the book, Eternity in the Hearts by Don Richardson. He studied old civilizations that didn't have the Bible, but they had God moving, you know. And Epimenides said this: I am now about to offer sacrifices based upon three assumptions rather different from yours. So this is Epimenides is talking before Paul ever did. First assumption is that there's still another God. Look at all that's going on. Guess what? There's still another God. In the matter of this plague, a God whose name is unknown to us. I got to try to remember to explain. And who is therefore not represented by an idol in your city? Secondly, I'm going to assume also that this God is great enough and good enough to do something about the plague, if only we invoke his help. The third assumption is a very simple one. A God great enough and good enough to do something. I like this one. So if I know when somebody's up here reading, we kind of zone out. So this third one. So first he says, hey, look, there's still a God you don't know about. He says, secondly, in the matter of this God you don't know about can take care of this plague. Thank God for the God is so great. Amen. That can do anything. My God can do anything, anything, anything. Thirdly, this is one that I thought was awesome. This is why I read this quote from Epimenides. Excuse me. Any God great enough and good enough to do something about the plague is probably also great enough and good enough to smile on us in our ignorance. That's good, right? If we acknowledge our ignorance and call upon him. I want you to understand something. 600 plus years from Epimenides, when he says we have to accept our ignorance, we have to declare it. 600 years from then, Paul looked at that and says, that unknown God, I'm about to tell you what you don't know. In people's lives, you have to let them know they don't know everything. In your life, you have to understand you don't know everything. Those things that we're going through today, those struggles, those trials, those problems that we're going through today can pay off for us into the future. We don't know what they're there for, but God knows. He's working in our lives, church. Be patient, be faithful. Let God do what he's doing for us because it'll be revealed in us in the future. He says, if we acknowledge our ignorance and call upon him. Paul looked at those people and he says, you need to acknowledge today is the day. You need to acknowledge your ignorance. He didn't say that in words, did he? Has anybody else ever read Acts chapter 17? Right? We all have. Read Acts chapter 17? He didn't say it that way, did he? But by looking at that altar and saying, people, this altar to the unknown God, he's saying you have to acknowledge your ignorance. Open up a door. I wonder why people were offended. All right, let me just take you through a little bit of history. Epimenides, he says we're going to sacrifice this. God is great enough to do what he's supposed to do. You'll like this. I think you'll like this. This is how it worked. Epimenides encouraged him. He says, go out and get a bunch of sheep. I don't know how many. Get a bunch of sheep, okay? He says, get them and set them up, but do not let them graze. Don't let your sheep eat. Has anybody else dealt with a full-size sheep that wants to do what it wants to do? Those things are slippery, mean, and just heads. They kept these sheep overnight. Didn't let them eat. Okay, I'm trying to follow this so if I have to pause for a minute, you'll understand. They picked out the sheep. They let them remain until morning. After they were sufficiently hungry, Epimenides, and I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but that's how I'm saying it. Let them go. What are them sheep going to do? They're going to eat, right? They're going to graze. Epimenides steps back. He says, let them go. The ones that eat, let them eat. He says, the ones that lay down without eating, they have a different fate. Almost makes you think that they all should have eaten, huh? It's ridiculous to think, if you've been around animals, it's ridiculous to think that when you've held them back from food, it's ridiculous to think that they wouldn't just go eat. But there were several of these sheep that went up into the hill and just laid down and didn't eat. Remarkable, isn't it? You want to believe God is in control? He says, where they lay down, mark that spot, remove the sheep, and build an altar there. He says, tonight, after you've built that altar, he says, sacrifice that sheep on the altar. And they said, sir, what should we name that altar? What name should we put on that altar? And he says, are we so foolish to think that we can make up a name for this God? Put on that altar. I'll read it. Agnosto Theo, to the unknown God. As far as we knew, as far as we know, and as far as I could tell from reading this, and this is just one man's study and one man's understanding of it, as far as we know, only one of those altars, and I don't know how many altars there were, only one of those altars survived 600 plus years. And it happened to be in that place where Paul was standing when all of Athens come to him. And it happened to be there that Paul can point over and say, hey, I saw an altar that said to the unknown God. It just happened to be the open door that Paul needed. I don't know if that hits you between the eyes like it hit me, but God used 600 years before the time that Paul would stand on that Mars Hill, on that place in Athens, 600 years before that, God ordained, God situated, God made in a place for them so that Paul could be used of God and reach multiple people in that time to that unknown God. And when I read that story for the first time, something just chills went up and down my spine. And I thought, not literally, actually more up and down my arm. I don't know where your chills go. People say they go up and down their spine. I don't have chills, but it goes up. And so wherever your chills went, they went there for me. And I looked at that and I thought to myself, God knew 600 years before Paul would be there what he was going to do. I guess he knows tomorrow what's going to be in my life. I guess he knows next year what he's got for Souls Harbor Church. But I struggled a little bit even, and it goes so much deeper and it goes so much more when I'm talking to somebody and when I'm ministering to somebody in their life. God knows what's been in their past. God ordained it so that they can be reached even today. There's something going on in our lives, and it's for a reason and a purpose, and if we're faithful to God, he will bring it to pass. For all things work together for the good to them that are called according to his purpose. I am not trying to quote that verse. I don't know what to quote it. I just know it's there, and I understand. I'm just paraphrasing. It's going to work for his good. And we may not understand, and we may not see it, and I don't understand it fully, and I don't get it all the time. And why do we have to endure sickness? And why do we have to endure problems? And why do we have to endure hardships? I don't know. I remember the time I heard, I really enjoyed the singer, the musician, the artist, Rich Mullins. I really enjoyed him. His very first album was crummy. I hate his first album. I've got it, but I hate his first album. His last two albums were trending so close to the Catholic Church into an apostasy, into idolatry, if you will. And I thought to myself, I hate to buy his next album. And then I heard one day that he had been in a horrible accident and his Jeep turned over. I believe it even caught on fire, but it was many years ago and he died. And church, I was saddened a little bit. You're always sad when somebody dies, right? And then I thought to myself, and this is where I first had this thought. If he would have kept going in the direction that he was going, he would have been walking in idolatry. And I wondered if it wasn't God's mercy to take him when he did, to preserve the man where he was. Does that make sense to anybody? Would you call a God that does that a good God or a mean, rotten God? I think a God that would take a man out of this life before he was in danger of hellfire is a good God. Amen? So how about if we go a little step closer? And what if a person that was right there and walking with God and loving on God, what if tomorrow, what if next week, what if next month would have put something in their way where they would have trended away from God? So God caused and allowed problems, trials, troubles in their life to keep them in the direction that they should be going. Is that a just God? Is that a good God? Well, I don't want to suffer in this life. Let me tell you something. Let me just say this. Isn't it better to suffer for 50 years in this life than to suffer for an eternity in hell? I don't know, but I'll tell you this. Well, I do know that answer, but I'll tell you, I don't know the answer to all the problems in life, but I will tell you that there are times, and I turned on my electric fence out by the sheep. It doesn't seem to be doing any good. It's kind of hard to ground an electric fence against snow. And goats just don't seem to care about electric fence. I think it's something to do with their hooves. But I turned my electric fence on. Do you know why? So that I can zap me some goat and sheep. I went out there one day to feed the goat and sheep, and our sheep just stepped right up over the fence and came out to visit me. That snow's built up 2/3 of the fence. It's only about a foot high over the snow. Just boop, walked out to visit me. Get back in there, you stupid. So I turned on the electric fence. It's just another height for him. But nonetheless, I'm wanting to zap my sheep if they're trying to get to where they should not be. Because it's safe for them. It's good for them. It's needed for them. I would rather God zap me to keep me where I need to be them to open up the floodgates and say whatever you want to do. I don't know what the problems in life are doing for us. I don't know what the problems of life are. And maybe it's not keeping us corralled. Maybe it's not keeping us where we need to be. There's so many other reasons. I'm just throwing out one thought. But what I'm saying is God will use whatever is in our life to help us to see Him better if we allow Him to do so. So don't discard those things that's in your life, those past, those. God may just be having them in His pocket to use for later. I got my keys in my pocket. A little bit later, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to start my car. Not with that key, because I'd have to go home to use that key. But I'm going to go out there and I'm going to start one of these. I'm going to start my car. And I'm going to drive home. But I have to pull it out of my pocket and use it. It's useful. It annoys me. Do you see all these keys? I hate having a bunch of keys. I hate key fobs. Key fobs are the worst. They're huge, and I have to take the battery out of them all. Because I go out to the garage to get into my car at 4:30, quarter to 5 in the morning, and as I'm pulling my key out, I hit the panic alarm. Beep, 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 beep. I got four other people sleeping in the house that's attached to my garage. Beep, beep. I was mowing the yard one day. And Sarah reached for the van door, and it locked on her. She accused me of playing around and locking the van door when she was trying to get in it. Y'all, it was in my pocket. I was mowing the yard. I hate. They're uncomfortable. All these keys. I know, I got all this in that pocket, but the keys are uncomfortable. They poke my, and then one of the kids will come jump up on my lap, and the key will poke right in my leg. I hate having keys, but I got to have mommy. I hate having troubles. I hate having problems, but God can use them. I told you, it's two-sided. Not only that, I feel like Souls Harbor Church is kind of that altar to the unknown God. That altar was used. That altar was looked at. That altar was considered. That altar, they were mindful of that altar. They knew it was there, but one day God caused it to shine. And it reached people. We're not preserved and not being used. God is using us while we're preserved. But I wonder what day, what time we're going to flourish and we're going to be used in that special way. So as I read that, I wanted to share it with you. Maybe you say to yourself, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. It's not, whatever. But I'm telling you, I thought that was so incredible. He took several sheep, didn't feed them, said, let them go. If they lay down, we want the spot, we want the sheep, build an altar. One of them places, God put his hand on one of them sheep and pushed him over. Held him, maybe pet him, I don't know. Does God pet sheep? And said, you're going to be there. And that spot, 600 years from now, will be a spot that Paul can use. I just think it's incredible. For such a time as this, we're here. We're preserved and we're used. Man, does it stink? I want my kids to grow up with religious freedom. I want my kids to grow up and raise their children in a wonderful, grand, awesome way. I want grandkids. I want to see them. I want to see them just, you know, I want them to be able to homeschool without all the regulations that Pritzker is going to try to put on us now because nobody wants to go to public school anymore. I want all these things. But God looked down and says, hey, I've reserved you for such a time as this. Now go forth and be that man, be that woman, be that church that I've called you to be and do what I've called you to do. We may be that altar. It may have been overgrown with weeds and had to be cleaned up. It may have been cracked. It may have been this. It may have been that. But someday somebody's going to look upon us and say, that's the answer to the question I've had for so long. They just pointed me to that unknown God. And now I'll serve Him all the days of my life. Who's the next person that's going to come through that door that we're going to be able to help? It may be your family member. It may be mine. It may be a total stranger. But it's somebody that God's going to direct our way. Be prayed up. And be readied up so God can use you at such a time as that. Lord, I thank you so much for your goodness to us. I thank you so much for all that you've done for us. I thank you for the one that introduced us to that unknown God, to that agnosis theo. As we come into your presence before your throne, we just ask that you look upon us. And God, as you're preserving us, use us. I wonder how many people came to that altar and prayed to you, even in their ignorance. God, draw them in. Help us to go out. Teach us, show us who we need to go out to, that you may be glorified, that you may be honored, and that you may be lifted up. And I thank you for it. I pray it in Jesus' name.